Welcome to Community Stories. I'm your host, Melissa Kay. This is the fourth episode in our veteran series and the seventh story. You can hear episodes 1 through 3 on our shows tab at civicmedia.us. Within these stories, you'll hear what it was like to be deployed overseas in different branches of the military. You'll also hear why these folks made the decision to join the military and what happened along their journey. Some of these stories are funny, and some are difficult. If you listen between the lines, you can detect the bravery and courage it took for these heroes to dedicate their lives to service so we can enjoy freedoms in our country. Today, I'm delighted to introduce you to Sean Plant. Many of you already know him or have seen him serving in the community. He's post commander of our Buckley Baldwin VFW Post 2534. Without further ado, I'm Melissa Kay, and this is my conversation with Sean Plant. Well, hello, Sean. Thank you for sitting down with me on Community Stories today. Please introduce yourself and share with me what military organizations you're involved in.
My name is Sean Plant. I am currently the post commander for VFW Post 2534 here in Wisconsin Rapids.
Okay. And when and why did you get involved in the military?
I joined the Wisconsin National Guard when I was still in high school, when I was still a senior in high school. October of 94, I joined the Guards while I was still in high school, drilled on the weekends up until I graduated. After I graduated high school, I actually went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina for basic training, and then Fort Lee, Virginia for advanced individual training as a food service specialist.
Okay.
And then came back and served here with the 1/120th Field Artillery in Wisconsin Rapids until October of 1998, at which time I joined the active army and was stationed in Schofield Barracks, Hawaii.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's jump back for a second. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of information for me. Why did you join while you were still in high school?
My family has a long military past. My father and my three uncles all served in the military. My grandfather served in the military. So it was just a natural thing to go into some kind of service. That's why I joined the Guard initially, was to be able to serve that time, but still be able to continue on with my education, go to college.
So having had that background with your family history serving, did you always know you were going to join the military?
Not really. Initially, I was going to be a truck driver.
Okay.
But somewhere along the way, I kind of grew up a little bit and decided to, at that point when I was in high school, I decided I was going to go into police science. Hmm. And I knew that there was an MP, a military police unit in the National Guard. So I kind of leaned on that way to try to get some training and some experience. Mm-hmm. But then when I found out that the nearest military police unit was all the way down in Milwaukee, I was talking to the recruiter here in Wisconsin Rapids. I was like, well, what do you got here in Wisconsin Rapids? So at that point, So at that point, I became a cook.
And did you choose that or was that assigned to you?
I chose it. They said, well, basically, you can do administrative paperwork. You can go work on vehicles, and I was not mechanically inclined. You could go shoot artillery. I kind of like to be able to hear. Or you could cook. And at the time, I was working at Hirschlips here in Wisconsin Rapids, and I was like, I like to cook, so I'll be a cook.
Okay. So you went through training. When you got to, what was the base name in Hawaii?
Schofield Barracks.
Schofield Barracks in Hawaii. What year is this?
1998.
Okay. So you've been in for 4 years, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do in Hawaii?
I was a cook. I got stationed to the 225th Forward Support Battalion and got assigned to one of the garrison dining facilities on post.
Is it a large post there? Like how many soldiers were you serving?
We were serving about 800 a meal.
Wow.
So breakfast, lunch, and dinner, about 800 people.
How much staff did you have in the kitchen?
We normally had 14 to 18 people per shift.
Wow.
So depending on what day it was, you were either working on meats or you were working on starches and vegetables or you were working on the short order line or you were working on the salad bar. So
what was your main position in the kitchen or did it fluctuate?
It changed from week to week. A lot of the shift leaders I had were big believers in, okay, you do this job for a week, and then you go to a different section and learn that job for a week, and they just rotated us through so that way we were well trained on all the different aspects of our job instead of, okay, you're good at this, this is what you're going to stay here doing. And you know that does great for the position that you're on, but as far as your overall skill set, that doesn't work very well for a well-rounded
Right.
position.
Have you found in your experience with the military that that's something that they do?
Like I said, it depends on the leadership. Some prefer to, okay, you're good at this, I'm going to leave you on that so I don't have to worry about it. And like I said, with me, my thought always was rotate the people through, get them to learn every asset of their job. That way they're good at any part of the job they have to do. If you focus one person in on one part of the job that they're good at, they don't learn everything else. And somewhere along the way, in a different position or a different site, if they have to do something else, they don't have that experience, and you're doing them a
Yeah,
disservice
you're
in doing
limiting
that.
them to their learning capability. While you were there in Hawaii, did you cook with some of the local food that they had there?
No, we were primarily just on post and cooking just standard menus.
Okay.
So
So after how long were you there in Hawaii?
I was in Hawaii from 98 to 2001.
Okay. And where did you go next?
After Hawaii, I got stationed in Fort Riley, Kansas.
Okay. I bet that was a bit of a transition. Very different climate.
Very different climate, very, very much appreciated. I grew up born and raised here in Wisconsin, so we had four seasons. In Hawaii, it was the same thing all season long. The only difference was the grass grew longer in the summertime than it did in the wintertime. It grew a little bit slower in the wintertime. But it was summer all year long in Hawaii, so
Did you miss the snow?
yes, I did. Very much so.
Some people are going to empathize with you on that, and some people are going to shake their heads.
That's okay, I can handle it.
All right. So then you're in Kansas, and what did you do there?
Same thing, food service. I was
Okay.
attached to the first maintenance company, and we were assigned to a dining facility there.
Similar number of people coming through.
Yeah, about the same, 800 to 1,000 people per meal.
Okay.
It was a little bit bigger dining facility.
Did you have to do a lot of like bag lunches when they're out doing
We did. We
training?
yep. We did do some bag lunches. We did some what we call remote site feeds, where we cook everything and then we box it into thermal containers and send it out, and then they serve it out there in the field. So
Nice. So then, how long were you in Kansas?
we were in Kansas from 2001 to 2006.
Okay.
So 5 years in Kansas.
What do they focus on as a training facility there?
It's the same basic military training. At least once a year, we were going to the National Training Center in California to train up. It was, after 9/11, so everybody was training up to deploy to Iraq at the t Iraq and Afghanistan at the time. So we were doing smaller field training exercises on post. So that way we were getting trained both on the garrison, the everyday jobs, and then getting trained up on our field equipment to be able to go out into the real world to do the job. And then, like I said, once a year we were going to California to train in the California desert as to do our jobs as we would if we were actually out in the Iraqi or Afghani deserts.
And then from Kansas, where did you go next?
From Kansas, I got stationed in Fort Richardson, Alaska.
Alaska. Oh, wow. Now you
So,
really have been all over the states
been
then.
over.
So what was the difference in Alaska?
Not much, really. Alaskan environment is not much different than Wisconsin is.
Really?
There were some winters where we actually got more snow in Wisconsin than we did in Alaska. Sometimes it was the other way around, but it was still beautiful four seasons. And, but we did do some extreme cold weather training. We'd go all
Okay.
the way up to Fairbanks up by the Arctic Circle. And we did one field training exercise. We were out doing weapons qualification in 60 below. So
Yikes.
yeah,
Yeah.
that got a little interesting,
I
but
would say, do weapons function well at 60 below?
as long as they're dry, yes. If you oil them up, oil gets really sticky at that cold temperature. So
Ooh, that's a good thing to note.
yep, it was some training opportunities, definitely.
Do you have any memorable experiences from Alaska that stand out?
Not really. It was just, overall, it not training so much, but the off time was so much more enjoyable in Alaska because it's so beautiful and so rustic up there.
Yeah.
And you get bears that are just, walking down the street. You get up at 5 in the morning, get ready to go to work, and here's a bear or a moose walking down the street in the middle of the post, and everybody's used to it.
Yeah.
It's just part of the wildlife there, Here you get squirrels and chipmunks and rabbits, and Alaska, we got bears and moose. So
They're a little bigger.
yeah, a little bit.
Little bit. Did you ever have any encounters?
The closest encounter I ever had, I woke up one morning. I'd just gotten back from doing physical training. So I had gone home and changed to get ready to go to work in the dining facility, and I made a pot of coffee, and I just poured my coffee, and I go to open up the shades on my dining room window, and here's a moose butt in my window. Moose was kneeled down on its front legs, eating my lawn. So,
Nothing like waking up with a good cup of joe and a moose butt.
yep.
Well, let's take a little break here, Sean, and then when we come back, let's share with our audience where you went next.
Stick around. We'll be right back with a continuation of the story.
Well, welcome back. I'm here with Sean Plant, and when we left you last, he was just observing a moose butt out of his window in Alaska. Where did you go next, John?
Alaska was my last duty station.
Okay.
After that, I was medically retired after 3 deployments and came back home to Wisconsin.
All right. So, can you talk about your deployments at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my first deployment was 2003, 2004. I was stationed in Kansas at the time, and we went to Iraq. So it was interesting. It was the early days of the Iraq War. So we flew into Kuwait, and then we drove with all of our equipment from Kuwait up to where we were stationed up in Iraq.
Okay.
And we had to set up all of our barracks. We had to basically we took over basically an abandoned Iraqi army post. So a lot of the buildings were partially destroyed and everything. So we had to rehab the buildings to make our barracks. And then we had to set up our dining facility area and food storage and everything and start cooking for the troops that we were supporting at that time. So
Did you have electricity or were you running off
we were
generators?
running off of generators. The electrical infrastructure was very, very poor, very, very sad. So we were basically running our own electrical infrastructure off of generators.
Okay.
So
So what was it like cooking in that environment?
not too much different than what we had planned on, other than, it was a heck of a lot hotter. We're talking 120s, 130s during the day
Oofta.
and 70s at night, so it was, quite a bit hotter than even California got when we were training there. And then, the occasional random rockets or mortar shells coming in, so it was always interesting.
Did you have any warning when those were coming? Like,
Sometimes we have minor warning. Other times it was just like boom, boom. Well, here they go again. So,
did you ever feel like you were in mortal danger?
there were a few times where they got kind of close to our dining facility. We had one situation where the one day they fired a single rocket in, and it landed about 200 meters short of our dining facility. It landed in a supply yard,
Ooh.
and it was like, well, there goes the supplies that were in that area. And then the following day, same time of day, right during the lunchtime, they landed another round 150 yards past our dining facility and landed in a maintenance yard.
Ooh.
So it's like, they're trying to shoot for the DFAC. You
oh
know,
no
this is not fun. So the next day we were rather wary of it. You know, we're like, you know, trying to make every excuse not to be in the DFAC during lunchtime, which, yeah, that didn't work. We had a job to do. And, you know, the attack never came. Luckily for us, you know, there were people higher up that figured out that that was what it was. And they were able to intercept the guys that were setting up the rockets and took them out before they were able to fire that third volley. Luckily, they were stupid enough to set up in the same place every day. So it was easy to go, okay, that's where they're going to be.
But that could have saved your life.
Yes, very much so.
Wow. What was it like for when the soldiers were coming in to eat? What were you seeing from those soldiers?
A lot of it was, you know, just day-to-day activities. You know, the maintenance guys working on trucks and the supply guys, you know, taking care of supplies, the administrative people doing paperwork. Sometimes you'd have units that were out on missions during that day or during the night before. So, you know, if they were doing night missions, they come in for breakfast. They were happy to have a nice hot breakfast before they go take a shower and lay down for the day. Or, you know, if they were out on a day mission, they come in, you know, come in at dinner time, you know, and, you know, be able to get a nice hot meal. And, you know, we had TVs on in a dining facility. So it was a chance to relax a little bit and unwind and, you know, kind of work, relax off the day.
Seemed like a little bit of normalcy in a very weird situation you're not used to.
Yeah, definitely.
So you were there for a year?
My first deployment was 15 months.
Okay.
So
then you came home.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were deployed again right after that?
Or no. My next deployment didn't come until after I had transferred to Fort Richardson, Alaska. My next deployment was 2006, 2007, back to Iraq again.
So you were in Iraq in the desert, and then you got to go to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that was a very big change.
Yeah, that was different. And the train-up for that one we did out in Louisiana before we deployed for that one, so...
Also completely different environments.
Yeah, that was not anything like being in Iraq, no.
So then when you were deployed again after Alaska, you went back to Iraq?
I went to Iraq for my second one, yeah, in 2006, 2007. And we were stationed actually, again, on an old Iraqi army post that was built just on, well, actually, we were kind of in the center of Baghdad. We had one of the major thoroughfares run right across the front of our post, and we were surrounded on two other sides by farmland and one other side by a community area. So,
Did you ever spend any time off base?
Yeah, we did. We did missions off post. My second deployment, I started with doing base security when we first got there. And then afterwards, I was doing a lot of convoy security missions, going with the convoys, making sure that, you know, whatever we were transporting was safe. Mm-hmm. And then I also got into detainee transport missions.
Oh.
So the guy that was in charge of it when we first got there was getting ready to go do his mid-tour leave. So they're like, hey, would you be interested in taking over for him while he's going on leave? Yeah, sure. You know, what the heck? I'll do this for, you know, 2-3 weeks. That ended up being 6 months of it. So I did 98 detainee transport missions, transported 134 detainees to different locations. So,
So quite a bit different work than being in a kitchen.
Yeah, I spent a total of 3 weeks in the kitchen during that deployment. So I did not get to do my job a whole lot. But at that point in time, they had the civilian contractors in there. So they were primarily running the DFACs, and we were just kind of in there to oversee and make sure everything was running smooth. So we didn't have a whole lot of food service obligations during that second deployment. So
did you feel more secure in that in base than the first deployment?
Not really. It was still, you know, quite a bit of tension because we had, like I said, we had the major thoroughfare running across the front of the post. So, you know, we always had threats from vehicle-borne explosives. And then the biggest problem we ran into was on the north side of the post, it was primarily a Sunni community. And on the south side of the post was primarily a Shiite community. And the Sunni and the Shiites didn't really get along together.
Okay.
So a lot of the times they'd fire rockets at each other,
Oh.
which would go right over the top of us because they
Right.
don't like each other. And sometimes, you know, those rockets end up short, and guess who's stuck in the middle?
Oh.
So it got interesting quite a few times, so.
Well, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the continuation of Sean's story. Welcome back to Community Stories. I'm your host, Melissa Kay, and I'm talking with Sean Plant. At this point in his story, Sean is stationed on an old Iraqi army post in the center of Baghdad. Instead of being in charge of an army kitchen, during his second deployment, Sean was responsible for base security early on and later convoy security missions off post. He eventually took over detainee transport missions for another soldier on mid-tour leave, a 2 to 3 week assignment turned into 6 months. When we left Sean, he was explaining how the Sunni and Shiite communities lived on opposite sides of the old army base where they were stationed. The two communities didn't get along and would fire rockets at each other, sometimes falling short, as Sean said, making things interesting. Now we'll continue with his story as I ask Sean one of my favorite questions. What was the local cuisine like?
With having to do all those different transports, did you see a lot more of the country then?
Yeah, there was between the transports and the different supply missions and things that we did. I got to see, you know, quite a bit of the area around Baghdad and surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and other communities.
Yeah, spent a lot of time in the trucks on the road and spent a lot of time in helicopters. So,
Did you ever eat any of the local food?
Yes, we did. We did have a couple of the local nationals that were able to set up food stands. So the local flatbread was delicious. So, and occasionally we got to eat at a couple of the local national restaurants that were, you know, they were able to set up on post, and all their ingredients and everything were regulated by the authorities on post, you know, so that way they knew that they were serving us good, wholesome food. It
Right.
wasn't, you
You're
know,
not getting old meat or,
yeah,
you
not
know,
getting
not
old meat
proper
or, you know,
refrigerated.
they're telling us they're serving us chicken and here it is seagull or something like that. So,
Oof.
you know.
Or as my brother calls them, sea rats.
Yep.
Well, do you have any memory of like a favorite dish that you had over there or flavors that you really enjoyed? You said flatbread.
Yeah, the flatbread was the thing for me. The brick oven flatbread was just.
Did it have just like a fire roasted flavor to it?
Fire roasted flavor to it, and just the simplicity of it. It was just simple and wholesome, and tasted good. Sometimes we get just the regular flatbread. Sometimes they dip them in cinnamon sugar.
Ooh.
After they brought them, you know, fresh out of the oven, and so it would kind of crystallize it on the breads, and oh, it was just delicious.
Nice. Have you found anything comparable back here in the States?
No.
Well, so then after that second deployment, what happened next?
After the second deployment was our third deployment in 2009, 2010. That was my first deployment to Afghanistan.
Okay.
So,
was that a lot different than Iraq?
Yes, it was very much different from Iraq. Like I said, the first two, we were down in the desert. The deployment to Afghanistan, where we were stationed, was up in the mountains.
Oh.
So we got up there in October, just as winter was coming in. So we had a full-blown winter with snow and everything in the deserts of Afghanistan.
Oh, wow.
Throughout, you know, what would be the normal winter months. And then, you know, we actually had four seasons in the year that we were there. So
wow.
We had a full-blown winter with snow and mud and muck. And
was it similar to our winters here? Was
yeah,
it different?
It was pretty similar. It's just the temperature sways were a little more, a little bigger because we were up in the mountains. So
oh.
During the daytime, it did get warmer. But then the nighttime, because, you know, we were basically up above the cloud cover, we didn't have anything to hold the heat in. So it got cold at night and warm during the day. So
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So did that cause a lot of like the snow melt and more ice or?
Ice a little bit. Snow melt, not so much because it was the hot time during the day was a very short time. It wasn't long enough to actually like create a whole lot of melt off. So, and then, like I said, it got cold enough at night to really get a good hard freeze on the snowpack.
Yeah. Did you get a decent amount of snowfall?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in the one snowfall, we got 8 inches of snow.
Ooh, so, yeah.
You know, and us having been an Alaskan unit, we were like, okay, you know, this is nothing. This is just another day for the 4th Brigade, 25th ID. So
we know how to handle this.
Oh, yeah.
So were you stationed then, or did you serve in the dining facility during this deployment?
Yes, that deployment, I actually ran my dining facility
and my
food supply point. Mm-hmm. So I was an E6 at the time and basically doing an E7's job, running the dining facility, ordering the food for the dining facility. Plus, I had 4 splinter teams that were out running forward operating bases. They were running dining facilities on forward operating bases.
Okay.
So I had my E5s each running their own dining facility, feeding up to 80 guys a meal.
Wow.
So I had to oversee their ordering, making sure they were ordering what they needed and the amounts they needed, to include having emergency supplies in case, for some reason, a forward operating base would come under attack. They would have the food and the water on hand to be able to support an extended siegement.
If they were stuck there.
Yep.
So how far away were these other facilities?
Anywhere from 20 to 40 miles away from our main operating base. So.
Wow. So you're running 6 dining facilities in the middle of an Afghanistan winter.
Oh, yeah.
Any memorable things that popped up during that time?
It was all a new experience. It was nice being able to run my own facility and to be able to oversee those. I'd say the biggest memory I had was getting in there and looking at the supplies that I was left from the unit before me and going through and realizing that this was 2009 and I'm looking at food and water supplies that had expired back in 2003.
Oof.
I'm going, this is a problem. So I had to destroy all kinds of food and water supplies that were either heat destroyed or extremely out of date, and then to resupply my facility, my base, and have my guys do the same thing at their bases. Mm. So to make sure that, you know, everything was squared away and good to go, and being able to go into the ordering system and be able to put on not just, you know, standard meal items, but be able to put on a surf and turf night once a week, a soul food night with, you know, fried catfish and fried chicken, do an Italian night, you know, do all these different specialty meals along with our regular meals. And we were doing up to 1,200 meals a day.
Wow.
Out of the dining facility that we were running.
Just the one you were running.
Yeah, just the one that we were running. And, you know, like I said, not to exclude the extra 5 bases that my guys were running, plus supplying different long-range patrols that were going out, and you know, they'd be out for 3, 4, 5 days at a time. So I'd make sure they were supplied with the drinks and the fresh fruit and the food supplies that they needed to serve their guys, something more than just an MRE in a bag. So
right.
sending them out tray pack, self-heating tray pack meals, so that way they could have, you know, nicer food, nicer meals, other than, you know, like I said, just having to eat out of a meal.
Well, because there's nothing that brings morale down more than having to eat something repeatedly that is in no way enjoyable.
Yep, and morale was one of the biggest things that we wanted to keep up. You know, the 3 M's that the soldiers run on is money, meals, and
morale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And at that time, you said this is 2009.
Yep.
So had some of these soldiers that were over there that you were serving, had they been there for quite some time?
They rotated out. Everybody was on pretty much on a 1-year rotation. We had an Air Force unit that was in there for 6 months with us. The Air Force ran each of the different branches ran different lengths of rotations.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the Army, we were out there for about a year at a time. Some of the special units were only in there for 3 months or 6 months or 9 months.
Mm.
So everybody was on a different rotation. So we had a National Guard unit from Kansas that got stationed on our post. They were out there for, I think, 8 months.
Okay.
So,
but that's still a long time.
Yeah.
To be away from home and mm-hmm. to be eating meals. I appreciate that you put the effort in to give them a special, like, taste of home.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we wanted to make sure that, you know, food wasn't one of the things they had to worry about.
Yeah.
Each day. So we made it a point once a month to have a unit barbecue day where we'd serve them breakfast and then we'd shut the dining facility down. It also gave us a chance to do a nice, real good deep clean on the dining facilities.
Yeah.
But then we made sure that we sent out, we'd give the units a list of four different things that they could pick from to actually barbecue, you know, do a barbecue at each of their. So, you know, they'd have brats and hot dogs or hamburgers or pork chops or ribeye steaks or, you know, whatever we could come up with that mm-hmm. would be something a little different, and it would be able to build unit morale.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, just be something different than having to come in the dining facility three times a day. So.
Right. No, that's important for morale, like mm-hmm. you said. So you were there for a year?
Yep.
Okay.
12 months.
And then following that, what happened?
That was my last deployment, and I came home. I had back issues when I was in Afghanistan. My back had gone out on me.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yep. Yep, went to go pick up a box and couldn't stand back up. So.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yep, it got interesting, but, you know, Doc's got me healed up and got me back in it, and we completed out that deployment. And then after that deployment, between that and my second deployment in Iraq, I got blown up on two different occasions, two mm. different missions. So I had PTSD issues. I had a moderate traumatic brain injury. And between that and, like I said, my back had gone out and I was developing arthritis. I had been at it at the job in the Army for almost 20 years at that point.
Wow.
So my body was starting to give out on me, so it was time to start going through the process to move on to something while I could still move on. So
it's good foresight on your part.
Yeah. So at that point, I moved forward with my medical retirement and got out and moved back to Rapids.
Okay. Well, let's take another quick break, and when we come back, I want to hear about being commander of the VFW post.
All right.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more stories from your community. Welcome back to Community Stories on WFHR. We're glad you're here for the rest of the story.
So I'm here with Sean Plant, who is the VFW post commander of VFW post 2534. How did you get into that position, Sean?
I got into the VFW in 2016, and they were looking to move some newer, younger blood up into leadership positions. They wanted me to become post commander right off the bat, and
oh.
I said I didn't know what the heck I was doing, so I wanted to kind of learn about the post and learn the job first before I took too much of a step. So I started off as the junior vice commander of the post, and I did that for 2 years.
And what does that job entail?
It's you're basically the third in command for the post. You mm-hmm. you if the commander and the senior vice commander are absent, you would run the meetings. You're in charge of running different campaigns like the Buddy Poppies that we do every year
mm-hmm.
and different fundraisers. I also started learning the job of the post custodian, doing stuff for our spaghetti feeds that we do in November, our steak feed that we do in May now, and just, you know, learn the different jobs and, you know, what the VFW did. I joined the honor guard to do funeral honors for military members that have passed, as well as doing flag presentations for the different high school athletic teams. We do a flag presentation for the Swing Against Cancer benefit every year, the state cross country meet, you know, different events like that. So it was, you know, kind of learning all those different things that we do. And then I took over as commander of the post and led the post for 2 years. And then that was right at the beginning of COVID. And then our post custodian, who was also our honor guard commander at the time, was 90 years old at the time.
Oh, wow.
And he developed COVID.
Oh, no.
And then developed pneumonia 2 months later. And then developed a heart murmur 2 months after that. So he decided to step back from the honor guard commander position and the post custodian position.
Understandably so.
So he basically passed that mantle on to me and said, here, it's your job now. And at that point, I decided that was too much for me to handle to be the post commander and the post custodian and the honor guard commander.
That seems like a lot.
And we had also joined the Chamber of Commerce here in town, and I was the chamber ambassador for the VFW to the chamber. So I told the guys I had to step back. You know, I could keep, you know, the wheels turning and keep the paint on the walls, but somebody else had to lead the post. And at that point, another member had taken over as post commander, and he did that for 3 years. In his 3 years, I had moved down to senior vice commander to advise him and mentor him. And in his time as post commander, 2534 has been an all-state post, all-state honors post twice.
Wow.
We've been an honor guard honors post once. And this last year, we also made All-American honors for the post.
Wow.
So.
Well, those are some prestigious awards.
Yep. And through, you know, that work that he did, he has since moved up to a state committee position, as well as some other stuff that he's doing in his personal life. So he decided to step back. So I stepped back in. I stepped back in as post commander again. So I gave everybody a heads up that I will do this for 2 years, and we've got new members that are coming in. So we our junior vice commander moved up to senior vice commander, and we elected a new junior vice commander, and so she is in the mix now and learning the ropes. So we've got a good chain here to keep moving the post forward into the future. So
wonderful. So tell me a bit about the organization and what veterans get by being members of the post.
Our biggest thing is supporting the veteran community through legislative acts, making sure that everybody gets the benefits that they've earned through the service that they've given, and also keeping, you know, helping the community out in service of veterans and also the youth of the community. A couple of years ago, when the 4-H building burnt down, 4-H clubhouse burnt down, they had nowhere to go. We brought them in. We brought them in. They now have their monthly meetings at the VFW post. So we're, you know, their primary tenants are faith, family, and country, which go along great with the VFW, because that's a lot of our tenants too, is faith, family, and country. And, you know, it gives them a place to meet and to have their meetings and continue their organization. And it also helps us fulfill our obligation to help support the community. So,
because that is a big part of what you do.
Yes, absolutely. So,
and for those out there who haven't yet joined a veteran organization like the VFW, what advice would you give them?
Join. There was a big stigma around the time that I proposed to join. There was this big stigma that the VFW is nothing but a bunch of old veterans that just sit around, drink beer, and smoke cigars and talk about the war. That's not who we are. at one point in time, that may have been what it is, but that's not anymore. We get together, we support each other. It's a place for veterans to get together and just support each other. You build a camaraderie when you're in military service. The man that's fighting to your right and your left, you know, you come to support them and depend on them.
Yeah, you have to trust them with your life.
You have to trust them with your life. And then after you get out of the military, you lose that sense of togetherness, of belonging. Getting into the VFW, you find that camaraderie again. We've had a number of people join recently that they've said, you know, they've felt lost. They've felt
adrift. You know,
they felt adrift. They've had no purpose, direction, and motivation to do anything because they never felt part of a group like they were when they were in the military service. And joining, you know, if you've deployed in a combat zone, you can join the VFW. If you were in service but never deployed, you can join the American Legion. If you were in the service and you were injured but not in any kind of combat, you've got the disabled American veterans. So you've got all these different VSOs that you can join. And if you were in the military, if you were deployed during Vietnam, you have the Vietnam Veterans of America. You've got these four primary veteran service organizations that you can join and get back in, and this feeling of camaraderie with people who have been through the same things you've been with. So, you know, if you've got something that you want to talk about, there's guys and girls there to listen.
Yeah, it's a different level of understanding.
Yeah. And again, it's, you know, it's not just guys, it's guys and girls. Our new junior vice commander is a female Navy vet who served during Desert Storm. So, you know, our quartermaster is a female. You know, we've got a number of females in the post, and that's one thing that we're having to fight through and change the vision on too, is that it's just a guys organization.
Right. So you've thrown out this old boys club kind of mentality.
The old boys club mentality is gone. You know, it's grown into, you know, this soldier service organization. So, and we have our meetings once a month where we, you know, share information, you know, what are we doing this month? What did we do last month? What's going on here? What's going on there? And then with our VFW meeting, after our VFW meeting is done, we sit down and have a meal together. You know, we foster that camaraderie, that fellowship, that feeling of togetherness. So, you know.
And so people can be as active or not as they want to
in the
organization, right?
Yeah, we've got... Like I said, our oldest active member is 94 years old.
Wow.
Our youngest active member, I think, is like 32.
Okay.
So we've got, you know, a large range. And, you know, we do hear that from some vets, you know, I just got back from Iraq, or I just got back from Afghanistan, but I'm in my mid-30s. I'm growing a family. The kids are in sports. I don't have the time. You don't have to be there every meeting. You don't have to be there for every event. It's great if you can, but if you can't, we understand. But still, come join the organization, you know, have that feeling of camaraderie whenever you need it.
Yeah.
You know, and that ability to reach out to somebody and say, hey, you know, I've got this issue. I need help with trying to get, you know, this benefit, or or deal with this thing with the VA or something like that.
It's a whole network of people that you can reach out to and get help from.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for sitting down with me today, Sean. If people want to get in touch with you, you have the number for the VFW?
Yep. The VFW's phone number is 715-600-0401. We hold our monthly meetings on the third Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. at the Donald J. Knuth Memorial Hall, the VFW Post 2534. It's at 2711 Redden Road. You can come out if you're not sure about joining the VFW. You can at least come out and just sit in on a meeting, you know, see what we're about. You don't have to join right away. It's not something where you have to know the secret handshake to get in the door. You can just come in and observe us and see if, you know, it's something you want to do. If it's, you know, something you want to do, please, by all means, come and join us. If not, you know.
It was nice to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me, Sean.
Absolutely.
And sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Community Stories on WFHR. I'm your host, Melissa Kay. This new show is about sharing stories from our community. The first series of stories focuses on our veterans. As the show progresses, you'll hear stories from our first responders, small local business owners, and maybe even yourself. If you'd like to share your story, please reach out to me at communitystories@civicmedia.us. You can also share feedback or thoughts on the show, or you can let me know if you'd like to be a sponsor. Now here's a sneak peek of an upcoming story with another well-known veteran in our area.
Well, I'm here with Rock Larson. Hi, Rock.
Hello.
What prompted you to join the military when you did?
Oh, boy, I was a young 17-year-old in Green Bay, Wisconsin, trying to figure out what I might want to do with my life. And I had a friend who had joined the Air Force, and then another guy and I were talking about it.
Thank you for joining us for Community Stories. I'm your host, Melissa Kay. Join us on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5 to 6 for more stories from your community.